this year, 2010, is of particular importance for health and development in general. It's like a rare opportunity, I think, for all of us who care about global health, and there are many elements to that. The U.S. has just launched the Global Health Initiative, which is extremely important in this context. We have the G8, G20 coming up. We see the shift also in power, if you like, in a sense, from the G8 to the G20, and we need to engage with a whole new set of countries here. We have the Millennium Summit coming up in September, the review of the progress towards the Millennium Development Goals. Then we have a couple of replenishment processes going on, not just the Global Fund, but also World Bank IDA has their replenishment. Others have. Gavi has a major initiative this year to mobilize resources for Gavi. So you have to see all of that, I think, in a context, but which means also there's a great opportunity here in this year, 2010, to define what we really want to achieve in the years ahead. But before looking into the future, I think it's always, you know, important to look a little bit back where we've come from, because the last decade has been absolutely unprecedented and extraordinary in the achievements on global health. And we need sometimes to remind ourselves where we were just 10 years ago, in the year 2000, when, you know, the heads of state and government came together to launch the Millennium Development Goals. In that year, you know, in Africa, there was basically nobody who had access to antiretroviral treatment. It was just, you know, almost unthinkable at that time. And look now, you know, there are 4 million people in developing countries on treatment, which is a great achievement over the last couple of years, with particular, you know, support from the United States. If you look at tuberculosis, 10 years ago, pretty much a neglected disease. Hardly anybody cared about tuberculosis. Yet, it's one of the big public health challenges of our time. And there has been tremendous progress in addressing tuberculosis. I have some numbers here in the presentation, and even if it sounds a bit technical, but if you think of it, you know, a few years ago, the incidence of tuberculosis in the highly endemic countries was 220 per 100,000 population. Now it's 170. That's a dramatic drop for anybody who you know understands epidemiology and so on. This is not a kind of small achievement. This is a great step forward, and which basically means we are on track for achieving the MDG on tuberculosis. And malaria is really kind of like a breakthrough, if you like. 10 years ago, there was hardly any effort. There was very, very little international funding for malaria. And look where we are now. I mean, we are seeing mortality declines of 50% and more in a number of countries, which has a big effect also on child mortality overall. And it has an effect on not only individuals, but also communities. So I think it's important that we recognize that. You know, what has happened between 2000 and 2010, as we now look forward to the years, you know, 2015, but also beyond that, I think, you know, towards 2020 and so on. And I've one graph here. All of that would not have been possible without an increased funding. Funding is not all. You need much more than just money and resources. But without the resources, these achievements would not have been possible. That's very clear. And we've seen basically the resources for global health quadrupling since 1990. But the major push has been over the last 10 years when, you know, it moved from around 7 billion to now more than 21 billion per year. I think we have never seen such an increase in resources for global health. And I think this has been an excellent investment with really good results. And this was connected to the establishment of a number of new organizations and instruments. And Gavi was one of the first ones, the creation of the Global Alliance for Vaccine Immunization in the year 2000. Then the World Bank initiated a couple of important programs on AIDS and malaria. Then the creation of the Global Fund in 2002, the creation of PEPFAR in 2003, creation of UNITAID in 2005, just to name a few. This has been instrumental to get us to where we are today. For the Global Fund, this is a particularly important year as we are moving towards our third replenishment. And I have a couple of numbers here for the scenarios that we will be presenting in 2 weeks' time to the Donors Conference in The Hague. We've always been asked by the donors to present them with three different scenarios that they will then discuss and consider. This year, they will be presented with three scenarios ranging from $13 to $20 billion for the three-year period, 2011 to 2013. And just as a background, at the last replenishment in 2007 for this period, we mobilized about $10.2 billion. So we are indeed, you know, asking for an increase for the next period, but we are also providing the donors with very clear indications what these resources would buy. Because you're not just talking, you know, abstractly in dollar terms, you're talking in how that can be translated into life-saving services, and then there's basically a choice. And we also always have to relate that now to how close does this get us to the Millennium Development Goals, so that we make it as concrete as possible. The Global Fund so far has been able to approve about $19 billion worth of programs in 140 countries. And any replenishment effort, you know, is always built on the results that have been achieved. That's the first thing. I mean, unless you can demonstrate that the money you received in the previous period has been used well and with transparency and accountability, you can't have any hope to mobilize more resources in the future. So that's what has been in the reports that we indeed launched last Monday and in a couple of places. And you have in front of you the executive summary of that. There is a big report. It's available on the website. Anybody who's interested can, you know, see that. The printed copies will be distributed soon. But basically you have here in a couple of pages the executive summary and the conclusion, and that gives you all the highlight numbers that you might want to consider. And just to refer to a few of them, in terms of the three diseases we are covering on AIDS, the highlight figure that many donors are looking at is, you know, the 2.5 million people that we are now supporting on antiretroviral treatment. And we will actually provide what is very important for many donors, the calculation, what it costs to maintain a cohort of that order of magnitude over the next 10 years, you know, taking into account that some of them will have to switch to second-line treatment, that you take into account the changes in the prices. We hope for some price reductions as you get some efficiencies in the market, but also you have to change a number of patients to more costly second-line and third-line treatment. So that will also be included in the package that will be provided and will be publicly available for the replenishment. We have supported so far 6 million people on TB treatment, which, as I said, you know, has been quite significant in really getting us on track for the MDG on TB. And then malaria, as I said, is a great success story. More than 100 million mosquito nets distributed, but there's more than the nets, of course. There's also the effective artemisinin-based combination therapy that has been introduced in many countries, and that together, the treatment and the prevention, has got us to where we are and hopefully further, so that we can, at the end of that period, talk about, you know, not only reaching the MDGs, but moving further to the elimination of malaria as a public health problem, which is indeed feasible, certainly in a number of countries first, but maybe also then more widespread. And I have included here some tables that I won't go through in details, but so just that you see the kind of the argument we are taking. We are providing the donors with, you know, information. What did we deliver in 2009? What is the global target that needs to be achieved? And then here are the three scenarios. Depending on how much money we get, we can, you know, get, you know, us closer to this target, depending on the outcome of the replenishment, and that is applied here to a number of key interventions, ARV, DOTS, mosquito nets, but also PMTCT, which is a very important area for us, prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV, where, again, we think, you know, we can see a real breakthrough here over the next couple of years, you know, more or less eliminating the transmission of HIV to the newborn children. And also mentioning the care for orphans and vulnerable children, which is a very important aspect of the work as well. Then a couple of words on the replenishment and why it is so important, and that leads to the kind of longer-term perspective that you indicated. Because we are all aware, we are in here not, you know, for the short term. I mean, it's it's not only important how much resources we'll have next year and what we can do. This is a long-term effort. In the case of antiretroviral treatment, it's obvious it's lifelong treatment, but also for all the other programs, it wouldn't make sense even to invest these amounts of money unless you were sure that you could maintain that, at least for the countries, you know, that are in greatest need and that will not be in a position to take over these costs, you know, in the near term. And that was the reason why the board of the Global Fund asked us to introduce a voluntary replenishment in 2004. And as I said, this is now the third replenishment we are organizing. And to cover, you know, the years until 2013, but already with a longer-term perspective. This is a particularly important issue here in the U.S., and let me mention that. I mean, I'm very much aware of you know, the appropriation cycle in the U.S. And the kind of need to focus on an annual appropriation cycle, which is a challenge for an organization like the Global Fund, quite honestly, and not just for the fund, speaking for the Secretariat, but more for our kind of, you know, implementers who need to know, you know, what they will have also beyond the year 2011, for example. But we've been in discussions here with the U.S., and I think there are ways how the U.S. can play a very constructive role in this replenishment together with the other donors so that it is clear this is, you know, to secure the longer-term commitments that we need. The way how we run the replenishment is through two meetings. As I said, the first one very soon, 24th, 25th of March in The Hague. It will be chaired by Richard Manning, who is the former chair of OECD DAC and very respected in the development community. And we will organize this meeting, you know, together with Gavi, where we have a back-to-back meeting. Gavi will then also convene their donors, and we have also a joint session on the second day to demonstrate the close partnership between Gavi and the Global Fund. So that is going to happen very soon. There they will discuss the results, the resource needs, and then they will go back to their capitals to consider what they might be able to commit, as we will then call them for a final pledging session, which will happen on the 5th of October in New York in the UN headquarters, chaired by Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who's actually indeed quite engaged in this whole process, I must say, as has been his predecessor, Kofi Annan, who chaired the previous replenishment conference. So that's the critical period between March and October when most of the donors will determine what they will be able to pledge. And let me make a few comments here on the emerging economies, because that is certainly, you know, on our mind, but maybe also on the mind of many of you. It is very critical, and this year probably more than before, what particularly the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, are going to do. All of them are recipients of the Global Fund. All of them are also already donors to the Global Fund, but to various degrees. It's not equal among them. And we will try to use this year, this opportunity, to convince all of them that not only do they have particular needs, they all have vulnerable populations, they have, you know, needs in terms of support for their emerging health systems, but that they also have a growing responsibility internationally that comes with their economic and political status. And so let me go through the four of them. Russia, for us, is the most advanced. Russia has already become a donor to the Global Fund since 2007, actually when they hosted the G8 in St. Petersburg. Since then, they have always reimbursed the Global Fund for any investment we have made. And there are considerable investments in Russia. As you know, they have a sizable HIV pandemic, but particularly they have a big TB and multidrug-resistant TB problem. So it made sense for us to invest in Russia and help them to address this problem. But they are now reimbursing us, which means they are contributing about $80 million per year. So that makes them a sizable donor to the Global Fund. Now the question is, will the other BRIC countries, you know, be able to follow a similar model? And that's a sensitive, you know, negotiation. But we are in the advanced stage of these negotiations with China in particular, where we have major investments as well, with India and with Brazil. Brazil is a smaller recipient, if you like, compared to the others. It's also a smaller donor, but they do contribute through UNITAID, and Brazil in particular is focused on south-to-south collaboration. They say, you know, one of the contributions we can make is through technical assistance to partner countries, which is another way how they can contribute. But, you know, we are in discussion with all of them in different ways, and also actually with other members of the G20 to contribute more strongly through this replenishment. Then I wanted to say a few words about the interconnectedness of the health-related MDGs, because that is a very important point and is very much on the political agenda. Not only have you seen that here in the U.S. with the launch of the Global Health Initiative, you know, there's a strong emphasis on child and maternal health, and which is absolutely right. I think none of us would doubt that this is an absolutely critical and important issue that we all support, and that more needs to be done, particularly on maternal health. And we have similar initiatives, you know, in the U.K. Sarah Brown has been a champion of that. Recently, Prime Minister Harper of Canada has made a big announcement on supporting maternal health. So you see that there is growing political commitment in that area. I think it's important to point out that there is a little bit false dichotomy maybe between the three MDGs. I mean, the Global Fund is certainly identified with MDG 6, and that is correct. I mean, our mandate has been to address AIDS, TB, and malaria. But by doing so, obviously, that has affected also MDG 4, 5, child mortality. I mentioned malaria, but also if you look at maternal mortality, and we issue a separate report on MDG 4, 5 for the replenishment that will probably go out, according to the latest information of my team in Geneva today. They will send that report out to all the donors. But obviously, I mean, I have the results here. But it shows, if you look at the causes of, you know, maternal mortality, particularly in Africa, of women in childbearing age between 15 and 49, still more than 50% of women are dying from AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria. AIDS alone accounts for 46% of these deaths. These are the so-called indirect causes of maternal mortality. And then, you know, also we are addressing it through other measures that you can, you know, describe as sexual reproductive health, because a lot of the kind of HIV prevention and also the PMTCT, you know, is addressing, you know, women's health issues. What is not yet addressed is the direct causes of maternal mortality, the perinatal period. I mean, the emergency obstetric care and so on. That's what I would regard as the most neglected area, where I think collectively we have to think how we can address that, because that's a tragedy that still 500,000 women are dying every year from these causes. And I've worked as an obstetrician in Africa, and therefore it is something that is quite close to my heart personally. But I think it is important to remember that you know, we have to look at these MDGs together in a comprehensive way and cannot separate that out and say, okay, now we want to create something new to address something that nobody has thought of so far. And I won't go more into health systems, although we might, you know, address that in the Q&A part, and also Carol, I mean, probably most people know that Gavi and the Global Fund are working quite closely on health system strengthening and the health system strengthening platform, which is a very important initiative, which we'll also present together to the donors in The Hague in 2 weeks' time. But then a couple of final comments on the relationship with the Global Health Initiative. As I said in the beginning, I think an extremely important initiative that many of us have been waiting for, so it's most welcome. But now it is important to define also how this kind of bilateral initiative that, you know, has a global scope and has global targets will work together with other partners, particularly also multilateral partners. And I think we can only hope to succeed together here. I mean, this is not something that one bilateral agency could address on itself. And I think we need a very good coordination here between this initiative and many of our ongoing activities. We've submitted, you know, some comments on the Global Health Initiative that you know, probably you can also make available. But we raised a couple of points where we think also the Global Fund can bring something additional to the table in a complementary way, if you like, to the Global Health Initiative. You can see the Global Fund as a pool, as an instrument that you know, engages in pooling the world's resources, first of all, to address these three diseases. But as I indicated, you know, it goes beyond the three diseases already. And being able to mobilize resources from more than 40 donor countries, including the emerging economies that I mentioned, but also the private sector, the private foundations, and we could talk for quite some time about you know, what the private sector brings here to the table, which is huge. It also brings a unique partnership between civil society and affected communities, and that has been absolutely critical for the last 10 years for the success of the Global Fund. The Global Fund wouldn't be where it is without this strong support from civil society, both in donor and in implementing countries. They are important in our governance structure and the decision-making and the implementation, providing technical assistance and also in advocacy. And I think the Global Health Initiative of the U.S. couldn't succeed unless you had also this strong support of civil society, and the Global Fund could certainly bring something here to the table. We always, you know, we've sometimes described ourselves as the multilateral arm of the Global Fund bilateral programs because we are trying, in a sense, to leverage the contribution of the U.S. through other donors. The U.S., you know, has always been the number one donor to the Global Fund, providing close to 30% of our resources. But because of the U.S. legislation that says, you know, not more than one-third can go to the Global Fund, we've always gone out there to the donor and said, hey, you know, you leverage, in a sense, the resources from the U.S. And I think we should see that also in this way. If we really want to achieve the targets that are defined in the Global Health Initiative, the resources that are available and that are indicated in the President's budget for FY11 would nowhere near be enough to achieve, ambitious targets here. So I think also the U.S. needs the support of the international community and of the donor community more broadly, and that's one way how we can work together. I've also included one table, that's my last but one slide, and you can look at that in more detail later, but it is in one of our replenishment reports, and it takes the targets of the Global Health Initiative and then adds the targets that we are, you know, targeting with our replenishment effort. And you can see, depending on what kind of level of resources we'll reach in this replenishment effort, how that would relate to the GHI and what we could achieve together. And you would easily see that, you know, for example, for tuberculosis, we would even overachieve in a sense. Here we are closest, and I think that calls for very close coordination. But for malaria and PMTCT, we could also get close to the international targets together, whereas some other areas are lacking behind. And I think, you know, that's something we should keep in mind when we enter into more policy dialogue with the Global Health Initiative and with other partners. So maybe I'll leave you with these tables and this information. Just to say, again, I think, you know, we're all quite excited about the opportunities this year, and I'm particularly excited to, you know, work with all of you on that to make that reality, because that makes such a difference in the lives of people around the world. Thank you very much.